This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
From a human perspective, the word surveillance might very well be one of the nastiest words that we have to encounter. But it's a very real word. It's a word now that has replaced the language that we got from George Orwell and all of those writings where we talked about Big Brother. Remember Big Brother? Big Brother watching over you? Well, now we call it surveillance. And surveillance has become extremely sinister. Extremely sinister. So what is surveillance anyway? Well, it depends on who you talk to, but in general, it's the monitoring of behavior, activities, information for the purpose of gathering information, influencing, managing, or directing behavior. It's about keeping a close watch over somebody or something. It's the act of observing another in order to gather evidence. One of the common methods, of course, through law enforcement is to catch criminals. But what if it's used to catch you? What if it's used to catch every communication that you make? Is that about catching criminals? What then is the motivation for universal surveillance? Believe it or not, today on Viewpoint, we're going to be talking with an attorney who actually has put together an organization called Anti-Globalist International. Anti-Globalist International. She says that things are heating up so badly with regard to the AI arms race and the international effort to try to control and govern everything that even Larry Ellison, the co-founder of Oracle, plans to implement AI surveillance in everyday life through a comprehensive network of interconnected cameras and AI systems. Amazing. And he's ready to do it. It's the most unbelievable effort that we have ever encountered. And Reggie Littlejohn is joining us here today. She's a graduate of Yale Law School. She's worked as a litigation attorney, just like I have. And she's founder and president of Anti-Globalist International, an organization dedicated to resisting the Great Reset and the New World Order. So, Reggie, it's so good to have you back on the program today.
Thank you for having me, Chuck. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know why it is that it takes us attorneys to be a mouthpiece for truth and for righteousness out there. But it seems that that is necessary. Maybe God has a particular intention for us to use these gifts that he's given us.
Well, this is the thing. This globalist coup is being drafted in legal terms. And so it takes a lawyer to understand it. So, for example, we've got the International Health Regulation Amendment from the World Health Organization, which had to do with surveillance. We've got the new pandemic treaty draft, which is going to be voted on in just a few days by the end of this month, from the World Health Organization. And we've got the Pact for the Future from the United Nations. And all of those are legal documents, and they are long. Okay, so I read the new pandemic treaty on a plane recently. It took me several hours to get through it. It's only 31 pages long, but nevertheless, it was so dense legalese. And this is what they do. They do things that are complicated, that are legal, that most people, that are impenetrable for the great majority of the population. So that's a reason I think that attorneys do play a special role in trying to counter this.
Well, we attorneys often refer to all of that kind of language that seems so common as boilerplate. But this kind of language that you're reading isn't boilerplate at all. It's a collection of small print that is designed to be unbelievably, incapable of discernment by the average person, isn't it?
Right. And also, not only you know, do you need to be a lawyer to really understand all this stuff? But you have to also be in the movement. You have to be paying attention to what's happening. You need to understand the superstructure, because the language that they put this stuff in is pretty neutral. Like, if, you know, if somebody, even a lawyer, were to read it, they might not understand, you know, sort of the catchwords or the catchphrases that they have. So
in other words, it's designed to be the language design. Well, who could differ with that particular thing? On the other hand, what it's designed to do is be so all-encompassing that they can actually use what we call regulations or interpretations to advance and the depth of what the language is supposed to imply.
Right. So let me just give you an example, okay?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm talking about the pandemic treaty. And also, this is the World Health Organization, the pandemic treaty, which has not been voted on. It's going to be voted on later this month. And then also the international health regulations. So the topic is surveillance. And so in the international health regulations, it says that they need to, that countries are agreeing to address misinformation and disinformation. But in the treaty, on the direct treaty, it says that they are going to prevent misinformation and disinformation. So number one, what is misinformation and disinformation? If you're just a lawyer who's not been following this stuff, you would not even understand. You might say, okay, well, that's good. I mean, well, it's good to prevent misinformation and disinformation. Well, what you don't understand, unless you know the context, unless you've been following this closely, is that in the beginning of COVID, basically, you know, who defines misinformation or disinformation? You're talking about Big Brother, right?
Right.
Well, Big Brother is the World Health Organization, and they define misinformation and disinformation as anything that was contrary to whatever message the World Health Organization is putting out at the moment. So, for example, in the beginning of COVID, as I'm sure you will recall, the Chinese Communist Party and the World Health Organization were both saying that there was no human-to-human transmission of the virus. And we know that that's false. We know that there was human-to-human transmission. But if you had said that at the time, that would have been misinformation and disinformation. If you had, at the time, they were saying, this is not a lab leak. This is, this came from a bat in a wet market. And if you had said, no, it looks like a lab leak to me, that would have been misinformation and disinformation.
All right.
You know, so they define what is misinformation and disinformation. And so even an attorney would not know that basically they are becoming a worldwide ministry of truth. To obligate countries to prevent misinformation and disinformation is really frightening.
As truth. Yeah, they're presenting misinformation as truth.
Right, but they also want to prevent it. It's not even like they want to censor it after it comes out. They want to prevent it from coming out. How do you do that? How do you do that?
Well, that's the question for us to talk about after this coming break. How do you do that? Friends, when I said this is surveillance is a bit sinister now, maybe that's looking at it mildly. Our guest today calls it the digital gulag for globalism. I think she's right. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismire, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Antiglobalist.net. Antiglobalist.net. That's how you connect with Reggie Littlejohn with regard to her website, Antiglobalist International. She's president and founder. I'd like to know, before we go further, Reggie, what is it that caused you to leave the active practice of law as a litigation attorney to pursue this particular focused agenda?
Well, it was not a direct route. Okay, so this is. I'll try to be quick.
It's all right.
Okay, then I won't try to be quick. Okay, so I was an attorney, litigation attorney, and I represented a couple of Chinese refugees in their cases for political asylum in the United States. And these women had both been victims of the one-child policy, either forced sterilization or forced abortion.
Right.
And so this was in the mid-90s. And I, you know, actually, you know, on a personal note, I had actually just gone through a couple of miscarriages myself. So I knew what it was like to lose a child that I had wanted. And when I saw that these women were being dragged out of their homes and strapped onto tables and forcibly aborted up to the 9th month of pregnancy, and some of these forced abortions were so violent that the women themselves were dying along with their full-term babies, I did not know of anyone else who was actually dealing with this issue. I've quit the practice of law and decided to apply all of my legal skills to raising the visibility of this horrible atrocity. Mm-hmm. So this was in the early 2000s. So I, you know, founded another organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers, to stop forced abortion in China. And we also save baby girls from sex selective abortion and abandonment and just grinding poverty, save abandoned widows in the Chinese countryside. We're also saving widows in Uganda. And we do Chinese human rights is really... And also just women's rights in terms of, you know, a woman's right to have her child, okay? That's a woman's right, you know, in China. That's not the way it's interpreted in the United States. So then when COVID hit, I saw Chinese-style totalitarianism being exported worldwide through the World Health Organization. So then I founded a number of organizations, but the main one is, I co-founded, but the main one is Anti-Globalist International. So that's antiglobalist.net. And I would encourage people not just to go to the website, but to sign the manifesto, because if you sign the manifesto, that's going to, number one, increase the signatures on the manifesto, which is important. But number two, it's going to put you on my email list where I will send you updates about what's happening, about surveillance, about all the horrible things that are happening in our world in terms of this globalist coup. And so... what I saw is that in the beginning of COVID, there was an attempt made to really terrify everybody about COVID.
Right.
I was terrified.
Hold on just a second. Isn't that ultimately one of the primary reasons for surveillance?
Sure.
To terrify people.
That's what I'm getting at, Chuck. So in the beginning of COVID, I'm sure people remember, they made it sound like it was Ebola or something. You know, it was just so horrible, you know, and my husband and I were terrified along with everybody else. Then we actually got COVID, and for us, it was just like, it was like a cold. It really was not that bad, okay? Uh-huh. And we got through it, and then we had natural immunity. However, then there was the whole thing about this deadly dread disease, and it was a deadly dread disease for some people, but it would be people who were already compromised in some way. Like if you're a super strong,
for the most part, yeah,
right. For the most part. So anyway, the point is that they use the terror in order to justify number one, this massive rollout of vaccines worldwide, including even vaccine mandates. And then also the need for what they called in the beginning the vaccine passport. So the idea being this virus is so dangerous, it's so deadly that we need to have everybody, you know, has to have an app on their phone that says whether they're vaccinated or not, because then that's going to control whether you can go shopping for food, whether you can go to any public place, whether you can take transportation, whether blah, 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 you know. And I said, my gosh, this is the China social credit system.
So it was kind of like a precursor to the mark of the beast referred to in Revelation chapter 13 and 14 of the Bible.
You could say that. Okay, so this is how I believe that would work.
Right.
I don't believe that an app on your phone is the mark of the beast.
Right. I agree.
This is what I will say. Okay. So the point of having the app be on the phone is that they say, oh, well, paper passports are too easy to forge, right? So we've got to have this be digital. Well, I mean, digital stuff is super easy to forge as well.
Right.
And so then the next thing is going to be, this needs to be a chip in your hand. Then we're getting into the territory, you know, of the mark of the beast. So I think it's a precursor. Isn't that what you said, a precursor?
That's right, a precursor.
Right, exactly. I think that it is. That's my belief as a Christian. I don't say that on my website or anything like that because mm-hmm. people look at you like you're crazy.
Right.
But anyway, you know, if you look at Revelation and et cetera, and something about the mark of the beast is that it's not just, you know, something that's in the hand or in the forehead, but it's something that which you will not be able to buy or sell.
Right.
That is precisely what this thing is, okay?
So it's about complete control.
Right, and including and possibly especially buying and selling,
mm-hmm.
all right? I mean, that's like the hallmark of the mark of the beast. So I'm sitting here looking at this and saying, okay, this app on the phone that says this mandatory vaccine passport on the phone is something that could be the digital or technical host for the China social credit system. And I went to a couple of tech experts, because I'm not a tech expert, and I said, is this true? And one of them was a conservative, and one of them was a liberal. The liberal, the conservative, listen to this, Chuck, this is interesting. The conservative said, yes, it could serve as the platform for the China social credit system, and that's why we need to stop it. And the liberal said, yes, it could serve as the platform for the China social credit system, and that's why we need it to force people to be vaccinated.
Okay.
Isn't that
In other words, for absolute control. And so you use this phrase, the digital gulag for globalism.
Right.
What do you
right.
mean by the digital gulag?
Okay, so what's a gulag? Gulag is like a former system of concentration camps in the former Soviet Union. So what's a digital gulag? It's a digital way of imprisoning people. So let me just talk for a minute about the China social credit system.
All right.
Okay, so in China, and just think, okay, let me just say this. They don't call it the vaccine passport anymore. I co-founded something called the Stop Vaccine Passport Task Force. And I think that we succeeded in making that nomenclature toxic. So they don't use those words anymore. They just call it now the digital ID or the real ID. All right, and that's another thing. This thing that is supposed to pass May 7th, that you can't fly if you don't have a digital ID or a real ID is actually not true. You can fly with a passport, but any interoperable national ID can serve as the platform for the China social credit system. So this is how it works in China, and it could work the same way here. So they have, okay, your ID, all this goes up into AI. It's very dependent on AI because they're surveilling over a billion people over there. All right.
Right.
So you've got real time, you've got facial recognition, you've got real time geolocation, so they know what you look like, where you are at all times, and then it's connected, of course, your credit card, your bank account, your medical history, your criminal history, your internet search history. You can tell a lot about somebody, you know, what they're thinking about, but mm-hmm. what they're searching on for the internet, okay? You want to know who somebody is, see what their internet search history is. Their internet search history, internet spending history, you know, what you buy on Amazon, or they have different organizations over there.
Right.
And then, you know, they attach basically every aspect of who you are. So so in terms of your spending history, they will give you points for things and take points away from things. Like if you buy, I don't know, a video game, that would be taking points away because that would show that you're lazy. If you buy diapers for a baby, they'll give you points because that sounds like, you know, you're busy having kids, which is what they need over there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so then they come up with a score, and that score is, I forgot to mention, they also track all of your social media posts, of course. That's very important. So if you never criticize the government online, if you are up on all of your vaxes, if you basically are a perfect little Chinese communist sheep, then you can have a high score and you can live what looks like a normal life, but you are a slave. Because, you know, if you ever step out of line, you will be, you know, your score will go down and you'll start getting punishment. So if your score goes down because you criticize the government or you refuse to get vaccinated or whatever, the first level of punishment is you will lose your job, your kid won't be able to go to a good school, you will not be able to borrow money to buy a home or to, to start a business. And you won't be able to travel, not even on the bus, okay? So they will immobilize you.
Right.
And if you keep it up and your score goes down again, they will freeze your credit card and your bank account, which is a total paralysis. And then if you keep it up beyond that, they will just disappear you, all right? And so we do not want that here, and that's what the World Health Organization, in the International Health Regulation Amendment, they talk about a couple of things, surveillance, in the amendments and in the pandemic treaty, they have something, not in the amendments, in the pandemic treaty, they have something called the One Health Approach. One Health connects human health with animal health, with plant health, with the environment. With the idea that everything affects human health, and therefore everything is surveillable. All right, so we're talking about surveillance here. They're going to surveil all of everything. They're going to surveil people. They're going to surveil animals. You know, see if there's any kind of a bird flu or whatever, including companion animals. Companion animals are
right.
So your cat, your dog, your parrot, your horse, and then plants. And then the environment, it gives them the pretext to surveil every aspect of life on Earth.
Right.
All right. And then if they find anything that they don't like, then they can come in and start controlling it.
And disappear so, you.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, that sounds really. I know extreme, but it is what happens in China. And
it is exactly what happens in China. It happens even to leaders in China who run afoul from Xi Jinping's viewpoint. Highest ranking generals disappear. I have in front of me an interesting article, Reggie, that came out on May 4th from the World Tribune. Here's the title. China University Dean publishes a manifesto calling for the ouster of CCP regime. Start a prairie fire. There are two women who are a dean and an assistant dean at the South China University of Technology published this manifesto. It's circulating online calling for the Chinese people to rise up and oust the ruling Chinese Communist Party for the very reasons that you're talking about. So we know that these things are happening in China, that the World Health Organization had this little do-si-do with China concerning the matter of COVID. But what you're describing also links us with a fellow by the name of Bill Gates. In March of 2020, Bill Gates and his Microsoft group filed a patent application with the United States Patent Office that many people refer to as the 666 patent because it contains those digits in the number identified with the patent. And it was for the purpose of merging financial and medical history and control so that every person on the planet would have this digital ID, whatever you want to call it, that there would be no ability to transact business economically. In other words, you couldn't buy or sell. You couldn't get medical treatment. I wonder to what extent that's linking to your digital gulag for globalism. We'll talk about that after the break. Stay tuned, my friends. Reggie Littershon, our guest.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. Today we're talking with Reggie Littlejohn, an attorney who formed an organization called Anti-Globalist International. She's the president and founder. I think you can see that she is passionate about her concerns here, about what she calls the digital gulag for globalism. It's sinister surveillance. And so I laid the foundation out there for discussion in the next couple of minutes concerning Bill Gates and his patent application back in March of 2020. How does that connect with what we're talking about here from your viewpoint?
Well, it connects pretty directly because Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is a major contributor to the World Health Organization.
Exactly.
Okay, so something that people don't realize, people think that when the World Health Organization started out, it was just funded by the countries that, you know, that were members.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's funded in a large part, I think 50%, something like that, by private organizations such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and also Gavi, which is another vaccine-related and Bill Gates-related mm-hmm. organization. So, you know, can you really trust the World Health Organization to be making, you know, unbiased decisions about whether right. or not to respond to a pandemic with a vaccine when their funders would make a lot of money if their vaccines were required?
Right. Okay? And not only that, but their funders are all hyper politically liberal, spiritually liberal individuals, aren't they? Or organizations.
Well, that's right. And so what I want to say is that the World Health Organization, together with the European Union, is currently rolling out interoperable international digital ID. And so this would be consistent with that patent that you just mentioned.
Right.
And so they don't, and of course, the pretext given for it is, oh, we need these to track vaccination status. Of course, even that's bad enough. Let's say you decide you don't want to be vaccinated or you don't want the most recent booster. What's that going to do to your digital ID? Are you going to be able to, I mean, they could quarantine you to your house. And with these digital IDs that are connected to your funding or to your bank account and your credit card, they could just say, okay, you know, you refuse to be vaccinated, you have to stay home, and your digital ID, your money, will not work if you leave your house.
All right, so how does that relate, how does that connect with what in the States are called the real ID that was mandated by May 7th if you were going to be able to fly in this country?
Okay, so the real ID is something, and I would ask people to go maybe to Twyla Brace. She's the person who's been really, really pushing this. Mm-hmm. But the real ID, see, it doesn't matter what the reason or the pretext is for installing these IDs. So with the World Health Organization is saying, well, we need to check your health and your vaccination status. So with the real ID, it's like we need to make sure that you're a real U.S. citizen, you know, so that you can fly, et cetera. It doesn't matter what the reason is. What matters is that it is an ID that is either national or international and mandatory because what that can do is serve as a platform for the China social credit system.
All right, so it's an entry-level way of paving the way then for the greater surveillance and control that we're talking about.
Right. So, you know, we would trust the Trump administration with that, but we have no control over who is going to be elected next. And in the hands of a lot of people, like, let's say, God forbid, you know, Gavin Newsom was elected president next. All right. What's he going to do with that infrastructure?
Right.
What's he going to do with it? All right. So I want to look here at these digital IDs. There's a chart on the World Economic Forum website. And and this is having to do with digital IDs and everything you're going to need a digital ID in order to do.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, you're going to need a digital ID to access healthcare insurance and treatment, to open a bank account and carry out online transactions, to travel, to even access humanitarian aid. So, like, let's say that your country has a tsunami and, you know, you need humanitarian aid. You're not going to get it unless you have a digital ID. To shop and conduct business transactions and secure payments online, to access social media platforms. So you're going to need a real ID to
All right, so Facebook. Every human being on the planet, according to this plan, becomes nothing more than a digit.
Right, but let me finish, though, okay? So you're going to have this digital ID to file your taxes, vote, and collect government benefits like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. If you don't have one, you're not going to be able to get that. To own a telecommunications device, all right? So anything that requires a digital ID to access these things is also everything you do digitally is trackable. And so they can track everything about you. And like you said in the very beginning, you know, this can come after you, after Christians. Like, let's say that some, you know, far left, you know, commie is in office, which is not, it's not impossible. Who are they going to come after? They're going to come after, for example, conservative Christians.
Well, right? That's the reason why, one of the reasons why I just recently came out with my 11th book called When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. Because it is coming, and it's not coming in a good and loving way. It's coming in often in a sinister way, just as you're describing.
Well, they already tried it under the Biden administration. In January of 2023, there was a memo that came out of the FBI office, one of the FBI offices in Virginia.
Right.
And saying that, characterizing traditional Latin mass Catholics as being potential domestic actors and terrorists. Right. Why? Why would they? Why would somebody who's a traditional Latin mass Catholic be, you know, a threat to a leftist regime? It's because obviously they believe in God very strongly. And, you know, this is something like the Chinese Communist Party can't stand. They persecute people of all religions because they want the government to be God. They don't want people to answer to a higher power.
Right.
But also traditional Latin mass Catholics have a biblical worldview. Like, they believe in pro-life. They believe in the biblical family, pro-family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so if your regime is anti, you know, life and anti-family, then you're going to want to persecute these people.
Well, that's the reason why what's going on starting tomorrow, or starting soon here with the conclave and the selection of a pope, whether or not you're Catholic or Roman Catholic or not, the selection of that pope is deeply rooted in politics, real politics, and focused on globalism. So,
well, yeah, and it shouldn't be. So, you know, just full disclosure, I'm Catholic, so I am really praying that the Holy Spirit is going to be present in that conclave, and that it's not going to succumb to that.
Yeah.
But the danger is very, very real, and I understand it, and I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, we just did a whole program dealing with it and quoted leaders, in fact, the three previous popes and leaders from within the Vatican who are saying it is primarily a globalist political enterprise with a little religion smattered on top.
Well, and it shouldn't be. I mean, this is obviously something that is of great distress to faithful Catholics.
Yeah.
So please, everybody, keep the Catholic Church and the conclave in your thoughts and prayers. I think it's beginning tomorrow.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, this is a time of high anxiety and concern for Catholics and for the world, because the Pope has a massive impact on the world as well, not just
right.
Catholics.
All right, now Reggie, you're passionate about this. Obviously, you've given much of your life to focusing and bringing people's focus to these things. Obviously, freedom and liberty concepts will fall like dominoes in the face of this digital gulag for globalism. But you have actually formed this organization, Anti-Globalist International. Now, when people go there to your website, what will they find?
Okay, the first thing they're going to find is a manifesto. And I would ask everybody to read and sign that manifesto. And don't be worried, because the only part, it's just your first name and the first letter of your last name and your country that's going to be on the website.
So you don't have to put your social security number, your digital ID number.
not your address, not your
not your DNA or anything like that.
No DNA. God, just okay. And then on the right hand side, there's going to be some videos, and I think that specifically talking about the Catholic Church, I think it'd be very interesting for people to watch a interview I did with Bishop Athanasius Schneider about globalism, and then you will get the true view about a true Catholic view about globalism. He totally opposes it. Okay, so that would be. But there's several videos there that I think that you should watch. Now we're going to be launching a campaign to get the United States out of the United Nations, so that will be up there, shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, the latest is that at least Donald Trump is saying we might just do that.
I know.
He got us out of the World Health Organization.
Yes, I know.
Talking about possibly getting us out of NATO, and I don't know if that would actually take place. I think it's more of a threat than a reality. But he's talking about getting us out of these internationalist, globalist focused agendas. Why would that be?
Well, I am just so relieved and glad that Donald Trump got elected, because he's really throwing a wrench into this whole globalist takeover, which is why they opposed him so strenuously.
Exactly. That's why they hated him. And from the moment he came down the golden escalator there at Trump Towers in 2015, he said,
right.
We're going to make America great again. This isn't about building a global empire. And they despised him for it, because they felt that we were right on the cusp of entering a new world order. We'll be right back after this with our special guest, Reggie Littlejohn. Friends, you're listening to Viewpoint. Our viewpoint does determine destiny. So does yours.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
The year was 1950, and James Paul Wardberg appeared before the United States Senate and declared, "We will have world government whether you want it or not. You're either going to accept it voluntarily or it will be imposed upon you by force. 1950, my friends. You think we might be headed in that direction for the final fulfillment? Sinister surveillance, the digital gulag for globalism, just as our guest today, Reggie Littlejohn, is talking about, who is the president and founder of Anti-Globalist International. I think we're there, Reggie.
Well, okay, so you asked why Donald Trump would want to withdraw from the
right.
United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And United Nations, okay, the World Health Organization is an arm, a tentacle. Let's say United Nations is an octopus. And so the World Health Organization is a tentacle. Some people say, oh, don't worry about the World Health Organization, worry about the United Nations. But the thing is that if the tentacle of the World Health Organization is the one that is around your neck and is about to, squeeze you to death, you have to worry about it. You have to cut off that tentacle.
Right.
So I'm really glad that he did that. That was wonderful. That was major. And I and others have been working years towards that goal. So it was a huge celebration when he did that. But the United Nations is just as bad. So the World Health Organization basically wants to take over directing the world in case of a health emergency like a pandemic. But the United Nations, under the Biden administration, in September of 2024, something called the Pact for the Future was passed. Did you ever hear
right.
of the Pact for the Future?
I remember that. We talked about that on this program.
Yeah. I mean, the Pact for the Future is horrific. And basically, what it does is it gives the United Nations an emergency platform that will operationalize automatically in case of what they call complex global shock. And there's a chart on the UN website of complex global shock, which includes a pandemic, okay? But then also climate change.
Right.
All right? If the grid goes down, if the internet goes down, if the banking system goes down, if there is a major event in outer space, and that's literally one of their categories.
Mm-hmm.
And then also they have something called unforeseen black swan events, which is anything they forgot. So then, if the Secretary General of the United Nations decides that there's and he gets to decide if there's been a complex global shock, then this emergency platform will operationalize automatically, meaning that they don't have to go back to the various nations and say, look, this is happening. Do you
right.
agree this is a complex global shock? Do you agree with this, with how we want to handle it? No. They already passed the Pact for the Future, so that counts as their assent to whatever the Secretary General of the United Nations decides. Is
which
the
makes
way
him the world
it.
Dictator.
Right, exactly.
And, all right, now here's what's interesting, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but the last three popes, starting with John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and Pope Francis, all called for a one-world government subject to enforcement mechanisms. And John Paul II said that must be invested in the United Nations. What do you say?
Yeah, okay. Well, I would have to see the evidence of that because that sounds pretty,
It's all set forth in my book, King of the Mountain.
Okay. Well, you send me that book,
with
okay?
all the, I will do that. You
yeah,
need
I know
to have that.
You sent me your last book. I want your book. I want to read it. and I think everybody else should read it. John Paul II has been sainted. And if he said that, I think that he didn't understand what we see now. Okay, so he might have said that in a different era when he didn't really see the truth. When the truth of 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. United Nations, people thought of it as much more...
Well, Benedict XVI also said it, and he was supposed to be a conservative guy. Francis also said it. So you got the liberals, the conservatives, you got John Paul II, who journeyed to 130 countries. He was... Malachi Martin called him the ultimate geopolitical pope.
Yeah. Well, he was instrumental in getting rid of communism in the former Soviet Union.
Right, that's
so,
true.
I would attribute to him that maybe he really had not, that maybe his advisors, were more globalist. But anyway, let me
tell you what, hold your opinion in abeyance. saying, you know, I don't want to believe that. It's hard for me to believe that.
Right.
But you might have to hold that opinion in abeyance.
Well, okay. I'm going to read you something, okay?
Go ahead.
This is a quote from Brock Chisholm, C-H-I-S-H-O-L-M, who was the first Secretary General or Director General of the World Health Organization, the first one.
Right.
Okay? He says, quote, "To achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family traditions, national patriotism, and religious dogmas."
Well, isn't that what the forces within the Democrat Party have been seeking to do for a very long time?
Yeah, but the point is that, you know, that his goal was to achieve world government, and he was the first Secretary General or Director General of the World Health Organization.
So isn't that interesting? Yeah. So the spirit of this, the intentions are clear, aren't they?
Well, yes, and also the intentions are clear, but I want to tell you something. Brock Chisholm was a psychiatrist, all right? Actually, an eminent guy, went to Yale and was very, very brave in war. He's from Canada, all right?
So he's desecrating your heritage as a Yale graduate.
Yeah. But listen, though, listen. He says to achieve world government is necessary to remove from the minds of men.
Right.
I mean, how their individualism, their family traditions, patriotism, and religion, right? As a psychiatrist, how, I wonder, did he propose to remove this from the minds of men? I mean, that's creepy.
Yeah, well, Freud got a running start on it himself. So.
I mean, we're talking about some kind of mind control here.
Yes, we are.
Removed from the minds of men?
That's why we're calling it sinister surveillance. And that's why, as we move increasingly toward the end of the age, if we're not there now, and the second coming of Jesus Christ, things are going to get so difficult that Jesus himself said the deception is going to be so great that if it were possible, even the very small remnant elect would be deceived. That's what Jesus said.
I know that's what he said. People, you need to, number one, I think it's great that you're listening to this show. I think it'd be great if you would, you know, buy these books that Chuck has written. You need to be in your Bibles every day so you can recognize the voice of the Lord and understand, hear that another voice, you know, hear that a voice is not his voice, it's another voice. And that's the only way that you, and surround yourself with faithful Christians, because that's the only way that you're going to keep yourself from being deceived in the end time.
Absolutely. Sister, that I'll tell you, what you have just spoken, regardless of my books and so on, what you've just spoken is the clearest expression you could have made concerning the implications of all of this. It's one thing to lose your political freedom. It's another thing to lose your salvation.
Right.
And
that's more important.
Exactly. So you brought the focus back to the greater impact of all of this. And I appreciate the vigor and the diligence and the focus and the passion that you're bringing here. So here's what I would ask you to do as we're getting close to wrapping up here. What specifically do you want to say to those that are listening today, other than what you just said? What specifically do you want them to do? What specifically would you want them to know in short order here?
All right. So in terms of what you can do, what I would do is, number one, be very faithful in your church attendance. I would identify maybe 10 faithful Christian brothers and sisters to really pour more energy into building those relationships, so that if the grid goes down, if, you know, if we have some kind of a collapse, that you will have people that you support and will support you, like little cells of support, because that's what's going to be the currency in that time. This money is going to be worthless. It's going to be relationships.
Yeah.
And I would also ask you to go on to antiglobalist.net, and hopefully, Chuck, do you have that on the show notes? It's antiglobalist, one word, .net. sign the manifesto that will connect you to me, and then, you know, you will get my newsletters and probably be put on my, I'm going to be launching a Substack. It's going to be called The Anti-Globalist. So that's going to provide current information about everything that's happening and things that people can do about it.
All right. Those are great suggestions. You know, it's interesting that the scripture says that as we see the day of the Lord's return approaching, we should not be unfaithful as so many are and forsake the assembling of ourselves together. But the more so we should be gathering together for the encouragement, the building up, the correction of the saints and so on, because it's going to get more and more difficult, isn't it?
Well, it is. And being a Christian, a person of faith, if you have other people of faith, it's like embers of a fire. Like you know how you build like a campfire and you put them all together so that it burns, and if you want to stop the fire, you want it to go out, you separate all the embers and they all go out by themselves.
Right, uh-huh.
I mean, that's what faith is like also. You need to be with other people of faith.
Well spoken. Okay. The website, again, is antiglobalist, all one word, .net. And Reggie Littlejohn is the founder, president of Anti-Globalist International. If there's any way that you can encourage and support her, that would be great through the website. And again, she wants you to sign up on that manifesto. That will be of great encouragement to her. Hopefully, our conversation here today has been not only informative, but encouraging to you, my friend, because we're living in very, very difficult times. If you haven't noticed it yet, you may think that it's just, well, about treaties. It's just about tariffs. It's just about this. No, friends, those are parenthetical things to the bigger issues. They're parenthetical to the bigger issues. And so we're trying to focus on one of the bigger issues here today, whether you want to call it sinister surveillance, the digital gulag for globalism, whatever you want to call it, there is a profound move in this direction. And it is interesting that John Kerry, a former candidate for President of the United States and former Secretary of State, made the declaration when Joe Biden was elected. He said, the election of Joe Biden is the catalyst to move the world in the direction of globalism and establishing the one world order. That's what he said. Now, you can take it for what it's worth, but that's what he said. And that's what was being led out, and that's why the election of Donald Trump was seen to be such a threat to the whole idea that we were right on the cusp of this digital gulag for globalism that was seen as the salvation of the world that would usher in a counterfeit Christ, a counterfeit Savior, to rule and reign from the Temple Mount. So, look, friends, we're talking about some big things here. You need to understand it. You need to be willing to humble yourself. This is a time for people to really seek the Lord with a whole heart, to follow Him, His word, His will, and His ways, so that you're not caught up in the seduction of the saints that is going to take place here through sinister surveillance. All right, become a partner, friends. Send your gifts to Save America Ministries. You know we rely not on any kind of support from commercial enterprises out there because they compel you one way or the other to speak their voice. We're not going to do that. We never have. 30 years on the air, we're dependent on the Lord to provide the resources, and He's depending on you. That's how it works. We don't beg anybody. If you believe in what we're doing, you value this program and this ministry, I urge you to go to the website, make your generous gift there, call us 1-800-SAVE-USA, write to us, and become a partner. And pray also for Reggie Littlejohn. She's really in the fight. Pray for her. Thanks for joining us here on Viewpoint today. Remember, your viewpoint does determine destiny.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.